You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm joined today with Jason Augustus to be able to kick off another exciting week of our show. So Jason joined me this weekend at the annual Leif Erikson Day March in Philadelphia that just celebrated its 10th anniversary. So that was a very, very exciting event to be able to go to, had a great turnout, great event. So we're going to kick things off by discussing that. So Jason, first of all, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Matt.
And for those of you who are not sitting here in our living room, we're joined today by members of Sky News. So we'll see. Hopefully this show will make it on the air, and it's a very exciting thing to be able to get our message out to people. And hopefully that means more listeners. We already have a lot of British listeners, so hopefully we can drive that up a little bit. So it's an exciting time to be here, and we're going to start with Jason. Give me your initial thoughts on Leif Erikson Day, on going to the event, and this is your first Leif Erikson Day march, isn't it?
Yes, it's my first one, and it was very, very cool. It was cool to see old friends, meet some new ones.
Well, and let's talk about that. So Keystone United, of course, is a great ally of the Traditionalist Worker Party, absolutely amazing men and women who really are holding the line and making huge advances. It's every time we go, there's new comrades to meet that share that level of dedication of everyday white working class men and women that want to be able to advocate for their communities. Of course, Steve Smith, who won re-election handily just a few months ago for his position within the Republican Party, was there as well. And I always love seeing Steve, and he's a huge inspiration to me on seeing at the local level how we can be able to engage politically. Of course, most of our listeners know from when Steve has been on the show that he won his initial post with his own vote. It was an open race, so he actually won. But the conservatives, as they always do, want to stand against nationalists and ran against him this time. But now he actually won overwhelmingly in a election that usually doesn't get a lot of attention. He won the overwhelming support of his community through campaigning, through door-to-door engagement with his local community, talking to folks, listening to their concerns, and making it clear that he'll continue to be their advocate. And he won re-election. So let's discuss that a little bit, Jason. What do you think about what Steve has shown us with being able to engage politically? And no matter what the political class says, no matter what the media says, of course, he was attacked nonstop in the media, in the local media, even in the national media, and some international outlets. He was able to win re-election through direct engagement with his community. So what do you think we can learn from that?
I think direct engagement is so important on the local level. Just speaking to average people in your area, understanding what their concerns are, and showing them that we have the exact same concerns and that we're able to do something about it so long as we do it together.
Well, exactly. And it's really based on hearts and minds. I mean, we are community organizers. We put our people first while the political class only serves themselves and their donors. And, what can be done in one local race in Pennsylvania can be taken all throughout our regions. And, of course, that's in the Traditionalist Worker Party. Our main focus for 2018 is we're preparing a large slate of candidates, including myself for the state legislature, and others that want to run for county commission positions, school boards. It's all going to be based on direct engagement with our community. I think a question is, so when are we going to get you to run?
Yeah, sure.
All right, is there going to be a representative Jason Augustus in our future?
Well, I don't know about that. If I can hone my people skills enough, that would be great.
Well, it's the sort of thing, again, being based in our communities and, with your experiences, of course, coming from New York, being able to say this is what multiculturalism is, this is what the dangers of diversity are, this is what capitalist exploitation is, it really opens up a huge avenue to be able to connect with folks to say that they don't want this here. Because, every community that I've seen, whether it's in Indiana or Montana or Idaho, that don't want refugee resettlement because it'll change the demographics and it's a danger to the community. They don't want their jobs going overseas. They want to be able to have safe, stable communities to have a good, healthy home for their children. And that's a message that resonates. And that's one that we're going to be able to win on. So tell us a little bit about what were your initial thoughts? Because there were, of course, the Keystone United men and women, amazing folks. There were kids there. It was a great event. And it was a celebration of heritage. And, you know, we do a lot of protests. We do a lot of, you know, on the street activism. But this was a time of celebration. So tell us kind of what your thoughts were on the fact that this was a celebration. It was one where it was joyous. There was home-cooked meals, traditional European recipes, and everyone just had a great time. It was normal, everyday white working-class folks coming together to celebrate our heroes and our heritage and then be working towards our future. So what were your thoughts and your feelings on you know, the fact that it was just a joyous celebration?
Well, it was a stark contrast from anything that I'm used to in New York City, because obviously we can't have those gatherings. Mm-hmm. Not only not make the fact that we don't make up enough of the population in New York City to even be able to do that, but if we were to do that, people would immediately think, even though it's a celebration, that it's some kind of malicious thing, because anytime white people get together, it's definitely got to be something bad.
Right.
But it was a really nice experience, and one that I hope to have again soon.
Well, and that's for anyone who lives in the Pennsylvania area. It's held every year. So if you're not already involved in either the party or Keystone United, I would heavily encourage all of our comrades out there who are listening to go ahead and get involved, because it's an amazing celebration. And being able to see so many people that come and are so dedicated, you know, guys that I've known for years that are having kids, you know, some already had kids, but other ones having new families, and seeing that every single year, the kids get a little bigger, or more kids, and everyone stays united. And it's all based on this principle of loyalty to one another, where it's the tribe, it's the community, where against a very hostile world, economically, socially, politically, we see every single year groups like Keystone United growing. And that's a very exciting thing. And getting to engage our local party comrades with these established groups to be able to show that we're all in this together, regardless of subculture or class, we all come together for the sake of our heritage and the sake of our children. So, you know, where do you think on that with the idea of where we're going? It's this mix of honoring our traditions, honoring our ancestors, but moving forward politically. What have you seen in the evolution of the movement? You've been involved in this for 15 years, long time, a veteran by, you know, you should be getting your nationalist watch or something in the mail before too long. I mean, what do you think on that, on really basing our movement on forward motion and honoring our ancestors? I think that's a stark contrast in some regards to what you see in some of the historical American movement that's usually based, it's being reactionary against changes or things that are being pushed on our community that we disagree with, where we're really focusing on being positive. And I think there's a lot to be positive about. So where have you seen that change over the past 15 years from a more frustrated, angry movement to a more joyful, you know, we're joyful warriors.
Yeah. I can't say exactly when it happens, but I want to say somewhere within in the last half decade, mm-hmm. that things have really started to shift away from the kind of more reactionary, angry type of thing into the more community organizing, family-oriented sort of positive movement that it's become now, mm-hmm. And that it's only becoming more so. Each time I attend these events, it just seems like there's more kids there, there's more families.
Yeah.
15 years ago, it was absolutely not that, mm-hmm. but today it's something that I can be, you know, happy to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really following a more European model. I think that's where the American movement for a long time has needed to move in that direction of, you know, it's about us, that regardless of if there were no international bankers, if there was no immigration crisis, we would still be nationalists because we care about the future of our children. And the struggle for our people, the struggle for the future of our people, that never ends. But it's a joyous one because it's a movement based on love. It's a movement based on loving our heritage. It's about loving our children and our grandchildren and generations to come. And that's so psychologically important to be able to have fun and socialize together and really have those strong community bonds, because community is what engages us. I mean, what do we have in the United States and Western Europe increasingly, especially amongst young people? They're so disconnected because they're told they can't have an ethnic heritage, an ethnic identity. They can't advocate for their own interests. They're being stepped on economically and socially. Drugs are flooding into their communities and they don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think being positive is such an important part of this. It's so important to be happy as we're doing this, because it's really a labor of love. There's sacrifices involved. I will never tell someone that there aren't sacrifices in being a nationalist, because that would be a lie. It's difficult, you know, economically and socially sometimes, but it's a joyous struggle. So, you know, for you, let's talk a little bit about the joy you have. I mean, you've got brothers and sisters. I mean, you've got you're basically a part of our family now, you know, with my son. And for any ladies listening, Jason's looking to start a family of his own one day soon. So let's talk about that, about the really just the positive feeling about how this is, no matter what happens in our political struggle, once we're victorious, that this continues, because it's a labor of love.
Well, like I said, I think 15 years ago it was a little different in so far as that it was more individualistic. Mm-hmm. Even though there were groups, it was still kind of heavily individualistic, and it was rebellious in mm-hmm. that way. Whereas, as we're starting to see these groups have kids, mm-hmm. that gives you a vision of the future, and you start really wondering, what kind of world am I going to be leaving for my children if I continue down this path? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and it's about forging those communal bonds with your community.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, the great book, Bowling Alone, is one that folks should read on what's happening within the American community, where people are increasingly isolated. You see mental illness go up. You see suicide go up. It's when you're disconnected from a community, you know, human beings were not built to not have a tribe. We're social creatures. And multiculturalism, as we've seen, leads to disunity within communities, especially white communities, that are told they're not allowed to be their own advocates, that they're not allowed to have their own celebrations, their own community, and their own forward motion for the best interests of their children. And you become so disconnected, you can very quickly turn to nihilism. You end up taking the black pill, and that's that's not a good thing for anybody. So, I mean, do you see the future of our movement? You know, I see it gaining ground everywhere, engaging politically, socially. I see more people coming out every single time we're at an event. You know, it's a really encouraging thing to see. Where do you see us going in the next 5 years?
Oh, I see us going down in, or rather going upward, in the same vein as the European movements. I mean, you want a better future for your children, and you see the dangers that forced integration has. You know, me coming from New York City, I can attest to this. This is not an environment that you want to raise children in. It's not an environment that you, even as an individual, could actually live in. It's just hostile to you, innately hostile to you, and it's only getting worse.
Yeah.
It's getting worse. The more silent we are, it just keeps getting worse.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have to be advocates. I mean, it's about being, you know, as I said, community organizers, and that's a phrase, you know, famously used by the left, but it's so true about our communities, because no one speaks, especially for the white working class. You know, as we were actually just talking about at breakfast. Good old Bernie Sanders saying that white people don't know anything about poverty, that we don't know anything about suffering. And yet every single day, I mean, you know, you've, you know, since coming down here to Indiana and being really a full-time party comrade, which is really appreciated. That sort of fanaticism, as Commander Rockwell said, is, you know, such an important thing. If you're going to do anything, be a fanatic about it. If you're going to be a doctor or a teacher or a mother or a father or an activist, you know, be a fanatic, because fanatics are those that care about something greater than themselves, that want to build something great. And that's what we need. That's that spirit we need. And I have to say that you're a fanatic in the best way. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about that that fanaticism, I think, because there's no one else advocating for us. So we need to take our struggle incredibly seriously, because people are counting, millions of families are counting on us. And what would you say, first I'll start with, you know, what would you say to Bernie Sanders? What would you say to the standard neoliberal left that, as they know, I mean, no one even argues that we've lost millions of industrial jobs, you know, economic situation for the white working class has decreased. Suicide is up. Drug abuse is up. Our communities are alone, and no one is advocating. And actually, people are advocating directly against them. They want more free trade. They want more immigration. They're really battling against our, you know, against the future of our people. But we're told that we're privileged the entire time. So what would you say to those that say that, you know, white privilege exists in Appalachia, in the Midwest, in white working class communities from New York City to Southern California, people that are struggling and are actively under attack by these neoliberal policies?
Well, I wouldn't have anything pleasant to say, Bernie Sanders, being a cosmopolitan Jew who is very clearly not advocating for the interest of our people. Mm-hmm. You know, he has his own group interest that is absolutely not ours. not just the poor and working class whites, but cosmopolitan whites, mm-hmm. any whites of any class. He's not the advocate for those people. So I wouldn't have anything nice to say about him. But what I would say to working class or upper middle class whites is that we are all in this struggle together, that the enemy that is attacking us is attacking us because of what we are, not what we have.
Well, right, because there's no, I mean, you look at the squatter camps for the Afrikaners and the Boers in South Africa, where white South Africans have been stripped of the ability to get even government support when they're unemployed, been driven out of the job market with quotas, and have been forced into some of the most abject poverty one can imagine. But yet they're still told that because, I mean, you're talking to me, you're looking at 5, 6, 7-year-old kids that are being told that because of apartheid, that they have to suffer, that they're denied medical care, they're denied education, they're denied a future because of the color of their skin. There is no point in which the system says, well, whites have been pushed down enough, because one only has to go to rural white working class communities in the Rust Belt or in Appalachia here, to the squatter camps in South Africa, where these families have been forced, and places like former Rhodesia, where there are no whites left. They seized all of the land. They kicked all of the farmers off, whether you're a rich landowner or whether you were a small family farm whose ancestors had been on that land for centuries. There was no point where, you know, as class is important for us, the class struggle is important, but they hate us because of who we are, and their policies are geared against us as a people, lock, stock, and barrel. What are your thoughts on that? You know, that there is no point at which we have been punished enough, that until... Yeah, there's several professors that I've seen give lectures on you know, white identity and things like that, saying that until whiteness is eliminated, until we no longer exist, then racism still exists. So the only way to solve this is to get rid of whiteness, which means to get rid of us, to get rid of my son, to get rid of other children, to punish the Afrikaners in South Africa, punish our communities here. Talk a little bit about that, about the idea that there's no such thing as it's going to be enough for the system.
Well, of course it's never going to be enough, because when you've managed to relegate our people into a concept instead of a distinct people, it's very easy to say, well, let's just end the concept instead of flat out kill you. They don't do this, obviously, with any other peoples. They don't do this to blacks. They don't do this to Asians. They do this only to whites. It's only us that... are not a people, we're a concept. So that concept must be ended.
Well, and it hits on, you know, I think an important thing where especially the cosmopolitan whites, you know, the media, the rich whites generally are think that they can hide from this, but there's only so long that they can follow the party line before the system turns against them. I mean, you look in South Africa as a great example. There are some of the people that supported the democratic transition. And they thought that they were going to be okay, but they have to live now behind barbed wire. They have to have armed guards standing outside their homes to protect them, and sometimes that's not even enough. And of course, it's the farmers that are bleeding. Tens of thousands of white South Africans have been butchered on their farms, you know, in the post-apartheid era. And of course, crime is up everywhere. But there's no way you can hide from this. This is a war on all of us. And if you're going to be a collaborator with a system that actively works against your people, it's only a matter of time. They might start coming for the working class. They might drive down the middle class and come for them, but eventually they're going to come for you too. There's no way out. Our entire people are under attack.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so far you can run. There's only so many places you can run because it's really not a matter of class. I grew up in a poor area. Mm-hmm. Now, if we remove race from the equation completely, by that cosmopolitan standard, I should have been fine. Mm-hmm. These Dominicans should have accepted me as their own simply under the class umbrella, but they did not.
Yep.
They rejected me. They attacked me. They despised me. And this is of no fault of them in and of themselves. It's the media that is telling them that whiteness is bad. The concept of me. The concept of my existence is bad.
Well, the demonization of our people is so complete. I mean, you see that, you know, in the difference between Black Lives Matter and the Nation of Islam, for instance. true black nationalists who understand the internationalist role in waging war against all free peoples, we can sit down and have a dialogue and be able to work towards solutions to racial conflict, support self-determination for the white community, the black community, the Latino community, every community. But it's those that are riled up by George Soros pumping, you know, $33 million alone into the Ferguson protests, you know, that promote this anti-white hatred. I mean, that's what these oligarchs do. That's what these internationalists do. That's what the media does. They aid and abet a genocidal agenda against our people. And we're the ones that, you know, have to deal with it every single day. We can't live in the gated communities that our elites do that support these policies because it's the socially acceptable thing to do. If you're, you know, I really remember the terms used, you know, in Britain and in Europe and in our cities here in the United States during the Cold War. You know, you had the champagne socialists, those that understood the party line but went to all of the elite parties. They had the right perspective to be able to, you know, to appeal to the economic forces they wanted to be able to suckle off of. But waging a direct war against us is something that needs to be understood, that, you know, there really is a battle against our people that is encouraged. It's active racial hatred against whites on a daily basis, whether you're a white farmer, a white coal miner, a white police officer that are being gunned down on the streets of America because of the color of their skin, not because they're cops. They're being gunned down because they're white police officers. And that's what the shooter in Dallas specifically said. He was out there to kill white cops. He wasn't out there just to kill cops. He was out there to kill white cops, because no matter who you are, no matter what badge you wear, what profession you have, where your education level is, there's a war against us.
Yeah, absolutely. But he was a good boy.
Yeah, he didn't do anything.
He didn't do nothing wrong.
Well, and it's that ethnic solidarity, I think, is such an important thing where you see that every other ethnic community has for their own. And whites, you know, one of our main missions is organizing politically and socially for our people. And it's helping them understand that they are a people, that they have their own interests, and that there is an active fight against them. So they need to be able to stand as whites. That's who we are. And we're all in this together, whether you're in Europe, whether you're in South Africa, whether you're in Latin America, or whether you're here in North America, we are all facing the same enemy on the same barricades. And, you know, that's why we also stand with nationalists of other backgrounds to be able to fight against the Jewish oligarchs and against the globalists, because they're waging a war against all free peoples.
Really, it's about self-determination for your people to be able to have self-governance in your own territory. I mean, that's what empowers you to make your community better, and that's not restricted to our people, as you said. That's of all people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the inevitability of course, capitalism. You know, even Noam Chomsky, in his critique on capitalism, when he says that capitalism inevitably will become anti-racist. It will become anti-nationalist because it has to, because you need to have the free exchange of peoples. You have to have there be no differences between race, color, creed, religion. Every human being in this capitalist system is dehumanized, becomes an economic cog, no different than a ton of coal or a pound of steel, that we become dehumanized individuals to simply be used by the global oligarchs. And that's where all free peoples, whites, are primarily under attack. But we're not the only ones. You know, from a child that has the bravery to pick up a stone in Palestine on the streets of Gaza and throw it against the occupying Zionist tank that's there, whether you see men like Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines saying no longer will the United States, which by the United States he means the Zionist oligarchs, control his domestic or foreign policy, that you are not going to come in and tell us how to run things. He's cleaning up his streets because he cares about his people. So this is a battle from the streets of Palestine to the Philippines, to Latin America, to Europe, fighting against the George Soroses of the world, to here in the United States. Every people that loves their children and their heritage is in this struggle together, because the globalists, the oligarchs, the Jews want to be able to break down all of our national boundaries. They want to occupy and destroy all of us, to use us as economic cogs to better enrich themselves, and then to be able to break down national borders to control us. So, you know, maybe that's a message. You know, we get a lot of interesting listeners from around the world. I've gotten a lot of messages from people of different ethnic backgrounds that listen and love this message. What's something that you would say to different ethnic communities in the United States or in Latin America, places like that, when it comes to our shared struggle?
Well, that nationalism is natural and organic. It's just it's natural. I mean, at every turn, the media is going to tell you that what you're doing is wrong, that it's racist or anti-this or anti-that. You're going to be attacked for your ideas, but your ideas are not fringe. Your ideas are not crazy. You are not crazy, and you're not alone.
Yeah. Well, that's so important because we're all in this struggle together. And, you know, to be able to understand that nationalism, I mean, it's the old Evola quote, of course, that my ideas would be considered normal by any human being born before the French Revolution, that it's these Enlightenment era principles. It's these principles that have now been poisoning the West for two centuries that have destroyed our natural kinship with, you know, our brothers and sisters by blood. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that, of course, whites are called racist when we advocate for ourselves, but it's like Duterte as a great example, you know, for cleaning up. His country has been used as a dumping ground for drugs. It's been used as a United States puppet state for 7 decades. And of course, when he's cleaning up his streets, going after corruption in the government, going after, murderers, going after drug dealers, and then rehabilitating his people. He's advocating for his people. And you see the Obama administration saying, well, that's a violation of human rights. That these neoliberal policies, these Jewish talking points are used, whether it's racist against whites or it's about human rights for everybody else. You know, you go in Africa and there are African nations that have traditional views on things like sexuality, that are opposed to homosexuality. And you have the Obama administration saying it's a violation of human rights to maintain your traditions. I mean, that's absolutely abhorrent. And it goes to show that the system is interested in breaking down everything that's traditional, everything that's organic, and attacking, you know, whites and everyone else who stands up against this position. So, I mean, what do you think on that? You have a black president, of course, the United States, that is going into Africa, telling Africans how they have to live and holding things like financial aid, holding medicine hostage if they don't abide by the Jewish line when it comes to homosexuality. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, my thoughts probably don't differ much from the community out there. I mean, I've seen videos on YouTube of them showing them gay sex looks like, what that happens, like just all these things that break the conventions of what they accept mm-hmm. in their societies. And you see horrified faces, mm-hmm. you see people repulsed by all of these neoliberal things that are coming in, and they're saying flat out, we don't want this here. Mr. Obama, we do not want this here.
Well, and that goes to, this is social imperialism. I mean, not only in white countries, I mean, you know, you look at our states, we were stripped of the ability to determine protecting the unborn. We were stripped away of having the ability to determine what is marriage within our communities. But it's not just us. It's nations in Africa that are being told they have to give up their Christian worldview, their traditional worldview when it comes to marriage, when it comes to abortion. You know, in Poland, the George Soros's, these international oligarchs, were pushing against a bill that was proposed to ban abortion in Poland because murdering the unborn is supposedly a human right. And it's these oligarchs that are together in this, telling every people on the face of the planet they must redefine their traditions, they must redefine their religion, they must redefine the very essence of society in order to go along with what they see as this new future, where there is no ethnicity, there is no culture, there is no religion. We're all simply slaves of the Jewish elites and the capitalist elites. So, you know, it needs to be understood that this is a worldwide struggle where all nationalists need to be able to come together. So we're coming to the end of the show. Give me your final thought to send our listeners off with.
Final thought. Hold the line. All nationalists are in this together, and nationalism is a worldwide struggle.
Well, I couldn't have said that better myself. So, comrades, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here for another edition of the Daily Traditionalist. We'll be here all week, and I'm looking forward to being able to be here with you tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Johnson, discuss the new developments in Syria and in Russia. So I look forward to being there. Jason, thank you so much for being here as my guest, as always. And comrades, I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day, and hail victory!
Be tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.